Hello and welcome to Volume 44, Number 27 of your weekly local news magazine, Grapevine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 5th of July 2024. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreader Desney, with audio editing by Stephen. And in this week's issue, the Haven Bridge is at long last available for opening. Galston says no to the big sign. The Wheels Festival was an engine-roaring success, and so was Caister's Carnival. In addition, Desney looks at the week ahead's telly. And all this is coming your way during the next hour or so, but first, it's the birthdays. A whole raft of people to congratulate this week. It's best wishes to Pauline Connett for Sunday, Tony Mouton and Patricia Jones, both celebrating on Thursday, and the very next day, David Harmon celebrates his 101st birthday, if my maths are correct. We send our very best wishes to you all.
Happy birthday to you.
Right, it's news time, so over to Desney.
Hello everyone, it's Desney here, your reader for today. I hope everyone's missing the sun that we had last week and hoping that this weather is going to go away soon and we get back to a few sunnier days. Rain in the middle of July is quite at the beginning of July is quite surprising, as this is when you expect the summer season to really take off. Anyway, let's get on with some news. Accused of sexually abusing. 7 historical child sex offence charges have been brought against a Norfolk man. James Cole, 27, is accused of sexually assaulting a 9-year-old girl in the late 2000s in Witney, Oxfordshire. He has been charged with 7 counts of assaulting a girl under 13 by touching between the same dates. The girl cannot be named for legal reasons. Cole of Churchill Road, Great Yarmouth, appeared at Oxford Magistrates Court, faced with 7 counts. His case has now been sent to Oxford Crown Court. A plea and trial preparation hearing has been scheduled to take place on August the 1st. Cole has been granted unconditional bail until his next court date. Free beach wheelchairs. Beach wheelchairs are now free to use at 2 prime seaside locations. A scheme by Great Yarmouth Borough Council means the sand and sea are now accessible for people with limited mobility in Great Yarmouth and Galston. These special wheelchairs sport large pneumatic wheels designed to glide over the sand, eliminating the risk of damage to regular wheelchair wheels or getting stuck. However, users must be able to transfer themselves from their usual wheelchair, as there is no hoist on these sandy-bound vehicles. Additionally, due to the struggle of manoeuvring these wheelchairs, it is required that another person pushes them. The chairs come with a chest strap but lack head support. User restrictions include a weight limit of 114 kilograms and a minimum height of 92 centimeters, ensuring comfort and safety for all. One wheelchair is always accessible at Galston, located in the shelter near the ramp opposite the shops and restaurants. The other is in Great Yarmouth, residing in a new storage area close to the public toilets at the jetty neighbouring the Slingshot and Big Wheel attractions in the Sea Life Centre gardens. Handy for future planners, bookings can be made up to a month in advance online. The wheelchairs are free to hire, with one booking in each location per day. Book the 8 a.m. slot on the booking system. However, people can collect and return the wheelchair any time between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Ruth Cockrell, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's Marketing and Events Officer, said, "We know our beach wheelchairs are very popular and are delighted to be able to help even more people enjoy the fantastic beaches we have in Great Yarmouth and Galston. The locations of the wheelchairs are easy for people to access and convenient. The funding for this project comes from the Experience Project at Interreg Europe, co-funded by the European Union. This initiative aims to reduce disparities in development, growth and quality of life across Europe's regions. Bookings can be made up to 4 weeks in advance. Home raider to be sentenced. A man who admitted a raft of offences, including burglary and theft, in the space of just 2 days, has had his case adjourned so further reports can be made. Billy Stratton, 22, broke into a property in Lawn Avenue, Great Yarmouth, on March the 4th this year and stole car keys from inside before he drove off. Stratton, from Chaucer Road, Yarmouth, was arrested the next day. He appeared at Norwich Crown Court, sitting at Whitefriars, on Monday, after he admitted burglary and theft. Stratton has also admitted theft of a motor vehicle, possession of cannabis, driving while disqualified, failing to produce a specimen for analysis, driving while disqualified and driving while unfit through drugs, as well as 2 counts of using a motor vehicle without third-party insurance. Matthew Edwards, representing Stratton, said the defendant has mental health issues and suffers from attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, and wanted these issues to be looked at by the probation service. Recorder Nicola Fitches ordered a report with sentencing listed for July the 11th. Another crime spree. A shoplifter has been banned from entering stores across Great Yarmouth after a 7-month crime spree. Curtis Harper, 30, and of no fixed abode, was found to have repeatedly targeted and stolen items from shops in the town over 7 months until May. He was arrested, charged and sentenced on several occasions for stealing groceries, household items and clothes. Appearing in Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court on June the 19th, Harper was handed a criminal behaviour order, CBO, banning him from entering a selection of town centre shops for 3 years. A spokesman for Great Yarmouth Police said, "With a view to supporting local businesses and their staff dealing with repeat offences, Norfolk Police successfully applied to the courts for the CBO." Life-saving defibrillator. A life-saving defibrillator has been installed at a community hub in Galston by housing group Orbit. Following the identification of a lack of such devices in the area, the Orbit team applied for funding from the Department of Health and Social Care's Community Automated External Defibrillators Fund. Having been awarded 50% of the cost, Orbit matched the remaining amount for the defibrillator that was subsequently fitted freely by maintenance contractor MPS Housing. Placed on the exterior of the Better Days hub, the accessible defibrillator is registered on the circuit, the National Defibrillator Network, allowing the ambulance service to guide individuals to it in emergencies. Louise Millington, Better Days Hub leader for Orbit, said, "We want to help create communities where people feel safe and supported. We're delighted that we have been able to secure this essential life-saving equipment for the people in and around our Better Days Hub, which also offers a range of free services to support people's health and well-being." The Better Days Hub, officially opened last October, provides free face-to-face support on various issues for the local community. Blockade ends. After months of frustration and then farce, the blockade of the Norfolk Broads is finally over after the operators of Haven Bridge said it would at last open up for river traffic. Peel Ports made the announcement on Monday, with the first boats since April passing below the crossing on Tuesday. The company had been refusing to lift the bridge because of the rowdy scenes when it opened in February. While some people clambered over barriers and abused staff, one drunk person tried to direct traffic. It wanted the bridge's owner, Norfolk County Council, to do more to avoid a repeat of the scenes, and the two sides have been in stalemate talks for weeks. The announcement comes days after it was revealed that the bridge was to open for regular maintenance work, but that boats would still not be able to pass below. It also came the day before Rachel Reeves, the Shadow Chancellor, was due to face questions on the issue during a visit to the company, which was keen to show the port area was open for business. Boaters and marine firms say the closure, which has effectively blockaded the Broads, has cost them thousands of pounds. One company director, who has faced huge extra costs due to the closure, said, "The whole thing has been pointless and frustrating." Haven Bridge, which is almost a century old, was brought back into working order at the end of last year, after it was shut in 2019 for a multi-million pound repair programme that was hampered by delays. But 4 months later, it was closed again. Peel Ports blamed its decision to shut the crossing on April the 9th on half a dozen incidents of staff being abused in February this year, saying Norfolk County Council was refusing to accept its health and safety obligations. During the deadlock, NCC insisted the firm had a statutory duty to operate the bridge as it manages the Great Yarmouth Port. It appears cash-strapped County Hall has now conceded and has agreed to contribute towards the cost of running the bridge while both parties seek a long-term solution. At a cabinet meeting on Monday, leader of NCC, K. Mason Billig, said, "We want local businesses to be assured that NCC has stepped in to make sure it will lift and that they will be able to use that bridge from now on. It has been a great worry for many people in Great Yarmouth." The agreement is expected to last 6 months. The decision follows a notice being issued last week that NCC engineers were going to lift it once a week for maintenance, but mariners were still unable to pass, a move criticised as a farce. A spokeswoman from Peel Ports said, "We're pleased to have reached this temporary agreement and will continue working with NCC to find a longer-term solution. The news is a welcome relief for many in Norfolk's boating community who have faced major ramifications due to the closure. The only other way to leave the Broads to get to sea was via Mutford Lock at Alton Broad, but this is unsuitable for many craft and left others with long and expensive diversions. However, there remains frustration at the fallout of the blockade." Goodchild Marine, a boat building firm based on the banks of the River Waveney at Borough Castle, has been unable to test its vehicles out at sea due to the closure. Sue Goodchild, who runs the business with her husband Alan, said, "The whole thing has been pointless and frustrating. It is such a shame the Broads network has been tarnished because they could not come to an agreement and instead chose to get into deadlock." Terry Everett, who has been stuck in the Broads for 6 weeks, waiting to sail his 100-foot cruiser to its new home in Essex, said, "We are absolutely elated that we can now get on our way. We are hoping to get out as soon as possible. The whole thing is confusing and a bit ridiculous. I don't understand the reasoning for it." Peter Ward of the Broom Owners Club, a group of people who sail seafaring cruisers built at the Brundle Boatyard, are looking forward to getting out to sea. "The decision to close it seemed a disproportionate response. This is a big and welcome step forward, which the boating community will embrace. But we will watch closely to see what happens after the temporary agreement ends." An inquest opened. An inquest into the death of a student who went missing almost 3 years ago has been opened after a body part was found on a beach. Last year, Norfolk Police confirmed that a body part found on Winterton Beach belonged to previously missing man Pavel Martiniak. The 21-year-old from Carroll Road in Galston was last seen in the area on November the 30th, 2021, after disappearing from his hometown. Despite extensive checks and searches, he could not be traced. An inquest into his death was opened at Norfolk Coroner's Court, based at County Hall in Norwich, on July the 2nd. It came after a body part was linked to Mr. Martiniak following forensic examination. Mr. Martiniak's death was not believed to be suspicious, and police would not identify what part of the body was found. His date of death was confirmed as March the 22nd, 2023. Senior Coroner Jacqueline Lake said, "Histopathologist Benjamin Swift said the medical cause of death was unascertained, brackets, decomposed and incomplete. Mr. Martiniak was born in Poland on January the 29th, 2000. He moved to the UK in 2004 and studied at Notre Dame High School in Norwich and East Norfolk Sixth Form College in Galston. He later attended the University of Essex to study business, but decided to live midway through his first year. He spent much of his time at home, reading philosophy, attending St. Peter's Catholic Church in Galston, and was also a lifeguard during the summer holidays in Hemsby. In November 2022, Mr. Martiniak's father, Andre, said, "This has been the most heartbreaking and challenging year of our lives. We think about him and miss him every passing day." An inquest to determine the official cause of death will take place early next year, with a pre-inquest hearing due to take place in November. Man jailed after 40 years. A sexual predator from Norfolk who raped a lone woman in Luton almost four decades ago has been jailed after a DNA match. Michael Elksnis, 69, from Great Yarmouth, approached a woman in the early hours of August the 20th, 1981, and followed her, repeatedly asking her to go home with him. When she refused, he offered to help, leading her up an alleyway on the pretense he was taking her to the taxi rank, but then raped her. He was jailed for 5 years at Luton Crown Court and placed on the sex offenders register after being found guilty of rape. At the time, the victim reported the incident to the police and forensic samples were recovered. As part of an ongoing operation to tackle historic rape and sexual assaults, the evidence was re-examined and a match was found with Elksness's DNA. Detective Sergeant Joe Goodson from the Bedfordshire, Cambridgeshire and Hertfordshire Major Crime Unit said, "This was a predatory attack by a man who saw an opportunity to prey on a lone woman. Elksness was able to continue living his life for years while his victim suffered from the lasting effects of being a victim of rape." He said specialist detectives are continuing to utilise scientific advancements and developments in forensic science to review historic cases such as this and ensure sexual predators are brought to justice. No one is above the law, and hopefully cases like this should demonstrate that we leave no stone unturned when it comes to relentlessly pursuing perpetrators, no matter how long ago the crime took place," he added. "I commend the victim for her bravery throughout the case and having to relive this 4 decades later." Bombshell on Love Island. A Norfolk security guard and personal trainer has flown to Fiji to star in the latest series of Love Island USA. Kane Bacon, 28, is one of 12 bombshells who joined the cast on Monday, July the 1st, to shake up the game. There will be 6 new men and 6 new women, with the 2 groups separated as one goes to the Love Island villa and the other to Casa Amor. Mr. Bacon grew up in Bradwell near Great Yarmouth and he now lives in Long Stratton. His social media shows his passion for fitness and his love of dogs. Vanderpump Rules star Ariana Madix hosts the American reality show, and it brings together a group of singles in their search for love. While fans can watch the previous 5 seasons of Love Island USA on ITV's catch-up service, ITVX, Series 6 is not currently available to watch for UK viewers. It is currently airing 6 days a week on the America streaming service, Peacock. No doubt it'll eventually get over here. Oh, this is a bit of a tongue twister. Delay devolution deal vote. Calls have been made for a crunch decision over Norfolk's multi-million pound devolution deal to be put on ice because of repercussions the general election might bring. Norfolk County Council will meet on July the 23rd to vote on whether to change its governance so the public can vote for a directly elected leader, a key component of the £600 million deal offered by the government. But with the prospect of a new government might have different thoughts on a deal, or might ditch it, County Hall opposition parties questioned whether this month's vote was worth taking. Liberal Democrat Stephen Aquarone a general election candidate in North Norfolk, and Labour's Terry Jeremy, a candidate in South West Norfolk, both raised questions at Monday's Conservative-controlled cabinet. Mr. Jeremy said, "Does the leader agree it makes sense to defer the decision on future governance until autumn so we can assess the impact of a new government rather than rush a decision we may regret for many years?" Council leader K. Mason Billig said, "Full council resolved in December for a further discussion to be held in July. And therefore, this will need to be brought back to that meeting, and it will be for council to consider how it wishes to proceed at that time. Until we know the outcome of the general election, speculation on what may or may not happen to our in-principle deal on devolution is premature." Mr. Aquarone said, "On the occasion that new improved deals are offered under a Labour government, would the leader of the council allow a vote to explore these at the expense of scrapping our current in-principle deal, which is not without its shortfalls?" Mrs. Mason Billig said, "Once the results of the general election are known, we will engage and work with any incoming government in order to deliver the immediate benefits for Norfolk that would come with a devolution deal. The idea of a county deal, which would see a transfer of power from Whitehall to the county council, was agreed in principle in December 2022. It includes an investment fund of £20 million a year for 30 years, control of the £12 million budget for adult education and £7 million for brownfield development. While it does not come with a mayor, it would see the public vote for a directly elected leader of Norfolk County Council." Strange to think that when you hear this, you will know the results of the general election. Sign bid withdrawn. It seemed like a bright idea at the time, but now a bid to put up a giant Hollywood-style sign spelling the name of Galston has been shelved after neighbours labelled it a waste of taxpayers' money. Great Yarmouth Borough Council was seeking permission to install the sign at the Pier Gardens next to the Ocean Room on Galston seafront. It would have been made from 9 6-metre heavy-duty galvanised steel columns supporting illuminated letters that spelled out the name. They would have been lit up during the summer season from dusk until midnight. Similar signs have already been erected at the Pleasure Beach Gardens in Great Yarmouth and in Hemsby. But the Galston sign, which the council had already purchased, is now sitting in storage. A council spokesman said the letters will be used instead for replacements for the signs in Great Yarmouth and Hemsby, if they fail. According to a document submitted with the application, which was withdrawn on Tuesday, July the 2nd, it was hoped the additional lighting would encourage more activities at the Pier Gardens after dusk during the summer. The plans, however, faced objections from 25 neighbours. Their main concern was the sign was a waste of taxpayers' money, which would be better invested in more litter bins, wheelchair access to the beach, or redeveloping the vacant Ocean Room building. One person said, "A complete waste of money and will spoil the natural beauty of the area. Galston does not need this sort of tat." Another commented, "We don't need a huge illuminated sign naming Galston on the promenade. It's an area of historical importance and not Las Vegas. One resident said the attraction of Galveston Seafront was the fact that it isn't plastered with tacky illuminated signs. On the flip side, one comment supporting the application said the sign would have added to the atmosphere of the pier gardens in the evenings. Another person also did not object, subject to one condition. I like the idea, they said, but it's Galveston on Sea, not just Galveston. Please use the correct geographical name for the town on the sign. Ah, those few extra letters would cost more. In March 2022, a ceremony at the Pleasure Beach Gardens on Marine Parade culminated in Great Yarmouth's sign being illuminated for the first time. At 27 metres long and 8 metres high, it is almost half the size of the real thing in Los Angeles. Hemsby then saw its name illuminated in April 2022. 17 metre wide and 6 metre high sign sits in a central location on Beach Road. In 2021, when plans for the sign were first announced, it was hoped they would create selfie opportunities. The signs, which are lit with LED bulbs, are part of the See Great Yarmouth in a Different Light project, supported by the government's town fund. Pier Gardens, which are owned by the Borough Council, form part of a larger conservation area, including Galveston Cliffs and Seafront, from the Clifftop Car Park to the lifeboat station on the riverside. Pier Gardens was the site of the former Galveston Open Air Swimming Pool, which opened to the public around 1939. The site was then redeveloped in the 1990s, with its design replicating the beach gardens and bandstand which existed before the swimming pool. The gardens boast picnic tables, benches and table tennis tables, plus the bandstand for live performances.
More news in a nonce, but first, news from Vision Norfolk, who say, come join us at Norwich Theatre Royal for a performance of Carlos Acosta's Nutcracker in Havana. This is on Saturday the 2nd of November at 2:30 p.m. and is described thus. This timeless story is brought to life with ballet at its core, enriched with Acosta Danza's unique style and with Cuban dance traditions beautifully woven throughout. This much-loved and joyful family tale is not to be missed. Join Clara in her humble home in Havana, getting ready to celebrate Christmas with her family. When Clara is gifted a nutcracker doll, she embarks on the journey of a lifetime to defeat the Rat King and travel into the world of the Sugarplum Fairy, accompanied by her nutcracker prince. That sounds painful. Tickets are £58, including a sighted companion ticket if required. Please book by Friday the 26th of July. Okay, back to Desney for more news, followed very closely by her regular look at the coming week's telly.
Fight for bigger tax share. It is a new rule that could reel in millions of pounds in tax from Norfolk's second home owners. But as it stands, there could be little direct reward to be gained for these cash cow coastal towns and villages. New policies being introduced next year will allow district councils to charge double the amount of council tax paid on properties which are not principal homes. Currently, only 10% of this income, estimated to be more than £16.5 million, will go directly back to the communities most affected. It has led to district councils teaming up to form an alliance to fight for a bigger share of the second home premium being introduced next year. Currently, they are only set to gain a meagre 8%, and parish councils get just 2%, while Norfolk County Council, NCC, gains the vast majority of the income, 75%. It means villages like Burnham Market and Brancaster, two second home hotspots, expected to raise more than £1 million from the new tax, would likely only see £100,000 directly back into the community. The Alliance, which is due to submit its case to NCC, hopes to change this and is seeking a minimum 50% return of the extra sum to be used by districts to support things like creating more affordable housing. But cash-strapped County Hall, which is grappling with finding more than £80 million in savings over the next few years, has made no indication it will entertain this idea. The two district councils that are likely to raise the most income from the second home premium are West Norfolk Council, WNC, and North Norfolk District Council, NNDC. WNC predicts it could make £6.5 million, while NNDC expect it to generate £8 million. Great Yarmouth estimates a £1.77 million a year boost. South Norfolk has chosen not to introduce the charge. Under the current rules, which dictate the share of council tax, about 75% goes to Norfolk County Council, 15% to the Norfolk Police and Crime Commissioner, 8% to district councils, and 2% to parish and town councils. For NNDC leader Tim Adams, the issue has arisen due to a lack of foresight by the government. The government did not think about it properly when the legislation was introduced. We asked at the time how they will ensure that this money comes back to those at the coalface of the second home issue, district councils that are dealing with the housing crisis, homelessness and emptying of communities. It is disappointing that the legislation did not take this on board. Mr. Adams added that district councils who are responsible for collecting council tax will face increased workloads due to the introduction of the second home premium, due to the complicated list of exemptions, such as those using second homes due to work-related reasons. NCC's issues in funding are separate, he said. I want to be able to look at the second homeowners facing the extra costs in the eye and say how this money will be used to improve the communities they holiday in. We need to be able to say how it is being spent, and it should be being spent on tackling the housing pressures we face in these places. Chris Morley, Cabinet Minister for Finance at West Norfolk Council, hopes an acceptable arrangement can be found between the two organisations and has indicated the extra income would be fuelled into its two property companies, which provide affordable housing and rental accommodation. Early discussions with Norfolk County Council have already begun, and the authority has said it is supportive of the districts introducing the legislation. NCC has said the additional tax is likely to make a material difference to the authority's finances, which is facing a multi-million pound gap in funds. However, it doesn't seem likely it will agree to giving up any money raised from the second home tax boost. Councillor Andrew Jamieson, deputy leader, said the revenue generated from second homes would be split based on each authority's share of the overall council tax, which is set out in law. However, he also said NCC will work with district councils to explore how services can be developed in areas most affected by second homes. It's television time. Now, I'm a sucker for Wimbledon, and I don't mind a bit of football as long as it involves men or women who represent England or Norwich City. But my goodness, we do have a lot of sport on TV at the moment. As well as the football and the tennis, there's the British Grand Prix on Sunday from Silverstone, and that's on Channel 4 at 1:30. And then there's cycling from the Tour de France on ITV4, which began last weekend and runs right into July. And all that's just on terrestrial TV. There's lots more on the Sky channels. So let's see if there's anything else to watch this week. Well, here are two or three of the latest shows recommended by our TV magazines. On ITV1 on Monday at 9 o'clock, there's a new series of Long Lost Family, where Davina McCall and Nikki Campbell help more people to reunite with long lost relatives. This is the first episode in a series of 7 episodes. These stories can be harrowing and are always emotional, but they do at least provide people with a few answers to questions they've wanted to resolve for years. This week there's a mother, now 76, desperately seeking her daughter, who she was forced to give up for adoption when she was only 16. And there's a woman searching for her brother, who was separated from her as a baby and sent back into care. On BBC Two, also on Monday, there's a new comedy drama called Spent. It's written and created and stars Michelle de Swart, part inspired by her experiences in the modelling industry. It's the story of Mia, a former catwalk model who, having been declared bankrupt in America, flies back home to London only to find life has moved on. And there are 6 episodes of this comedy drama. That's BBC Two on Monday at 10 o'clock. On Thursday the 11th of July on Channel 5 at 8 o'clock, Supermarket Own Brands, The Big Taste Test. In this show, we find out how supermarket's own brands changed the game in the luxuries market. Can some of these brands match or even beat some of the top brands in luxury goods, such as this week champagne and perfume? Now, they don't often appear on my shopping list. Well, maybe next month there might be a few other programmes to tell you about. The football and Wimbledon both finish on Sunday the 14th of June. Of July, I mean. Ah, but hang on. The Tour de France finishes on the 21st of July in Nice, far away from Paris. For the first time ever, it's not finishing in Paris. Because guess what Paris is getting ready for? The Olympic Games 2024. So, if you aren't a sports fan, all I can say is hard luck. And if you are a sports fan, you'll love it. No need to stay up till the small hours or get up extra early, because Paris is only 1 hour ahead of us. So there'll be no need for any of that. You don't need to miss a moment of it. Until next time, cheerio.
Wimbledon theme called Light and Tuneful, preceding getting you completely up to date with the rest of this week's local news.
Man attempted sexual communication with a minor. A man has been warned all options, including custody, are open after he admitted trying to communicate sexually with a 14-year-old schoolgirl. Stephen Hunter, 58, appeared at Norwich Crown Court, having been charged with attempted sexual communication with a girl, who was in fact a police decoy, in February 2022. Hunter of Brasenose Avenue, Galston, admitted the offence at court on Monday. Judge Catherine Moore adjourned sentence until July the 24th, so a pre-sentence report can be prepared. But, she warned, all options are open to the court, including immediate imprisonment. Treasure trove. A decorative tag, more than 300 years old, discovered in a ploughed field in Norfolk, has been declared as treasure. The gilded, hooked tag was found by Genius Zuckus, who was metal detecting, on September the 1st, 2023. An inquest at Norfolk Coroner's Court, held by Samantha Goward, heard that inspectors at the British Museum accepted the finding as treasure. The specific location of where the item was found was not heard in court, and it is now being stored at the British Museum. The item was described as a post-medieval silver hooked tag dated from AD 1550 to 1650. They were a popular decorative accessory during the medieval and Tudor periods. The function of the hooks was to hold together garments, to drape up skirts, or to simply be used for decorative purposes. Hooks would prevent skirts from getting dirty when outside, or were used to display rich fabrics from underneath. The accessories were also used to fasten collars and gowns without disrupting the patterns featured on the clothing. The rich ornament of the fasteners themselves hints at the preciousness of the garments to which they were attached. Windmill up for auction. A 19th century windmill situated on an island on the Broads that boasts a celebrity neighbour is up for auction. The converted Grade 2 listed property, known as Red Mill, is going under the hammer with auction house East Anglia on July the 24th. Located in a conservation area, Red Mill was one of 10 wind pumps built on secluded Haddiscoe Island in the 1880s to help drain water from the surrounding marshes until 1940. After being tastefully converted, the three-bedroom property has been let as a unique holiday home since 2010. Heading up curved stairs, a double red bedroom is located on both the first and second floors. Ladder-style stairs lead to the third floor, where the final double bedroom can be found within the cap of the windmill. Outside, the property boasts an enclosed garden with a lawn, terrace, barbecue area, storage shed, and access to the riverbank. Haddiscoe Island is an inland island consisting of 2,000 acres of marshland adjacent to the River Yare and River Waveney. The area is rich in wildlife, and the marshes are used for cattle grazing between April and October. Journalist and Loose Women star Janet Street Porter moved to the island in 2019, revealing that she had relocated to Norfolk to live in a ramshackle house miles from a road, surrounded by water, hares, marsh deer, and free-roaming cattle. Death of a man at work. A demolition worker, regarded as the best in the country, but who fell to his death while dismantling a decommissioned gas rig, was given too much latitude by the company which employed him, a court has heard. Stephen Picken, 62, was cutting the rig with a colleague from a cherry picker in Great Yarmouth Outer Harbour in 2019, when a large piece of metal fell off and struck the platform, catapulting the men off. Mr. Picken from Stoke-on-Trent, who specialised in cutting metal with oxypropane equipment, was described as highly regarded and the best in the country at his job. He died at the scene, while his colleague Mark Kumar survived but suffered life-changing injuries. Veolia Environmental Services UK Limited, which employed the two men, has admitted failing to ensure their health and safety at work. On Monday, July the 1st, the company's sentencing hearing continued at Ipswich Crown Court, with defence counsel submitting mitigating factors. The court heard that the company had apologised sincerely for the incident, and that it had taken these events extremely seriously. Before the incident, Mr. Picken had been on holidays for 3 weeks, during which time all work was suspended at the site in Great Yarmouth, the court was told. Counsel said there could not be a starker example of a company taking health and safety seriously than stopping work because their top man was away. The court also heard that Mr. Picken was hugely, highly regarded at his job, but that during the incident in 2019, Veolia had allowed him too much latitude while carrying out the work and placed too much reliance on his experience. We let ourselves down on this occasion. We fell short of our own standards, counsel said. It was submitted to the court that the company had medium culpability relating to Mr. Picken's death. Judge Martin Levitt adjourned the case until July the 22nd, when he will deliver his ruling and sentencing remarks. Allow them to pass. Firefighters are reminding drivers that every second counts, as they ask road users to give them more space. Being unable to pass vehicles can be a huge problem for the fire crews on their way to incidents. The issue is most often encountered on the narrow roads of the county's rural and coastal areas, but Norfolk Fire and Rescue Service say crews can also experience issues in urban areas. In residential streets, drivers may park on both sides of a narrow road without enough room for a fire engine to navigate between the vehicles. A spokesman for Norfolk Fire and Rescue said, "We want to get to the people in our communities who need our help as quickly as possible, and we all have a part to play in ensuring that this can happen. Every second counts in these situations, so please make sure you allow enough room for our fire appliances to get past when they need to. We are urging drivers to consider if a fire engine, ambulance, or any other emergency vehicle is able to get past. If drivers are in any doubt, we urge them to look for an alternative parking space." Burst water main. A burst water main left some locals in Acle without water. The water main burst in the street on Wednesday morning, flooding the road and leaving many villagers with low water pressure and, in some cases, no water at all. Anglian Water worked to fix the issue, estimating that the water would be fully restored to normal levels by 4 p.m. that day. Two-way traffic lights were set up around the works and are expected to remain in place until July the 9th. That's next Tuesday. On Wednesday, a spokesman for Anglian Water said, "We're really sorry that some customers in Acle may have no water or low pressure due to a burst water main in the area. Our team have been restoring water by pumping it into the network directly using tankers and are currently on site repairing the burst and expect to be completed later on today." Now, two items of news from Caister. First, the Caister Festival. Last weekend's Caister Festival has been hailed a resounding success by delighted organisers. Starting at lunchtime on Saturday, by 2 p.m. throngs of people had congregated in front of the main stage. Audiences were entertained into the evening by four East Anglian bands and a female solo artist, their acts punctuated by warm sunshine. Sunday's heavy rain did little to dissuade merry festival goers who eagerly awaited the reopening of the festival gates at 10 a.m. As the day's climate gradually improved, various local groups graced the main ring, while a dog competition occurred in an adjoining ring. The two-day event has been acclaimed as the best edition to date, with organisers saying it was great to see so many people enjoying themselves. Early plans are already under consideration to ensure next year's Caister Festival is even bigger and better. And now from the Caister Lifeboat. The names of donors will be unveiled on the side of a new lifeboat following a fundraising campaign that raised £50,000. Caister Lifeboat will host the event at the lifeboat station on Tan Lane in Caister at midday on Sunday, July the 7th. The festivities will begin with the blessing of the boat, followed by the unveiling of the supporters' names. There will also be a barbecue and music. Paul Garrod, lifeboat chairman, said, "The people who donated will be able to come down and see their names on the side of the boat. It should be quite a big event for the village." The new lifeboat, a £1.6 million Medina-class vessel, arrived in May and was built on the Isle of Wight by manufacturers Diverse Marine. This one-of-a-kind boat is yet to be officially named. In preparation for its deployment, the crew has been undergoing extensive training. Mr. Garrod said, "It's a completely different boat. We're going out on it as much as possible, learning as much as we can. We're confident in the next 3 weeks it should be in service." Restaurants to close. Two Great Yarmouth restaurants known for their unlimited breakfast deals are closing, a hospitality chain has announced. One Premier Inn restaurant will cease trading to the public at the end of the week, while the other has been put up for sale. It has been confirmed Brewer's Fair, inside the North River Road Premier Inn at Runham Vauxhall, will stop trading on Friday, and the Beefeater on South Beach Parade is on the market. A spokeswoman for Premier Inn owners Whitbread said, "After many years serving the community, we can confirm that Great Yarmouth Brewers Fair is closing its doors. Last day of operation is July the 4th, Election Day. From Saturday, the restaurant will change to a Premier Inn restaurant and will only be usable for guests staying at the hotel." The spokeswoman added, "Great Yarmouth South Beach Beefeater, attached to Great Yarmouth Seafront Premier Inn, is on the market for sale and will remain operational and trading until sold. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the local community for their support over the years and our amazing team members." The news comes as Whitbread announced plans in April to slash its chain of branded restaurants by more than 200 in favour of building more hotel rooms. The multinational hospitality firm declared record profits, mainly driven by people using hotel rooms. However, it was noted there had been a decline in footfall in their restaurants by non-hotel guests. Last month, Whitbread chief Dominic Paul said the firm is on track with the programme to restructure its food and beverage business announced earlier this year, which will close or convert more than 200 restaurants and cut about 1,500 jobs across the country. The plan is also designed to add more than 3,500 hotel rooms across its estate and increase operational efficiencies. And yet another festival at the weekend, the Great Yarmouth Wheels Festival, has drawn the largest crowd to the town's seafront since 2018, delighted organisers have said. The spectacle attracted nearly 60,000 visitors over 2 days, marking the busiest Saturday Great Yarmouth's seafront has experienced in years. Hosted by Visit Great Yarmouth, the event showcased more than 900 cars and almost 650 bikes, ranging from classic and sporty to quirky creations. The well-known Ken Fox Hell Riders, a 95-year-old multi-generational family stunt team, headlined the festival with their Wall of Death act, thrilling the audience with their daring tricks. Other highlights included the Stanage International Stunt Team performances, featuring fire runs and high falls and motorbike and quad jumps at St Nicholas Car Park. Celebrity appearances included Britain's Got Talent legend Titan the Robot, who brought laughter on the seafront with his show, and Roger Blighty, a comedic bike plane pilot who zipped along the Golden Mile. Additional attractions included a Rolls-Royce Merlin engine display and a Formula One car simulator. The Best in Show award went to a pink and blue VW camper on Saturday and an Escort Mark I Estate Cosworth on Sunday. Lyndon Bevan, chair of Visit Great Yarmouth, said, "It was an utterly fabulous weekend. The seafront was packed, the atmosphere was electric, and we were absolutely delighted to see tens of thousands of people on the seafront over the 2 days." Asa Morrison, CEO of Visit Great Yarmouth, said, "Early data suggests around 60,000 people joined in the fun over the weekend, which has certainly exceeded our expectations. There are, of course, things we intend to build on and develop, but for year one, we're really pleased with its success." The event also drew praise for successfully attracting such large crowds despite the cooler weather and a highly watched England football match. So it had some competition then.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accepts responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget, you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Andy, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.